Good morning. The Senate Education Committee meeting is called to order. Today is Friday, April 9th, 2021. The time is 9:05. We're meeting in the State Capitol Room number 205. In attendance are Senator Stevens and Senator Begich and myself, Senator Holland, Chair. I anticipate Senator Hughes and Senator Machicki showing up shortly. But we do have a quorum to conduct business. Thank you to Jeannie, our recording secretary, and Marissa, our moderator for the day. As a reminder, please silence your cell phones. First thing on the agenda today is the appointment of Scott Jepson. We're going to hear from Scott Jepson, appointment to the University of Alaska Board of Regents. Mr. Jepson, I believe you joined us by phone today. If you can hear me, please place yourself on the record and introduce yourself to the committee.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Holland, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Scott Jepson, and I live in Anchorage. I believe you have a copy of my resume, so this morning I'm going to start by providing some context and a summary of my professional experience. And I'll finish up with some comments on my interest in serving on the Board of Regents. I was born and raised outside of Alaska, but have now lived here for 30-plus years. My son attended UAF, where he received a petroleum engineering degree and is currently working in Anchorage. I got to Alaska in a somewhat roundabout process. I received a BS and MS in chemical engineering from the University of Texas in Austin. After I finished my education, I went to work for ARCO in Denver. I chose ARCO for a few reasons. It was a good job. It was near the mountains, and quite frankly, I didn't want to live in Texas on the Gulf Coast anymore. And ARCO had an office in Anchorage. Alaska is a place I had always wanted to live, and when the opportunity came to transfer from Denver to Anchorage in 1982, I was fortunate to land a job here. The 80s were a good time to be involved in North Slope oil development. There were the usual highs and lows in oil price, but it was still early days for Prudhoe Bay and Kuparuk. And there were great opportunities for a young engineer. In 1991, I was offered the chance to move to Midland, Texas to manage ARCO's oil and gas fields in Wyoming, New Mexico, and Colorado. I took the assignment because it was a step up, and I knew I had to leave Alaska to advance my company. When I stopped leaving, though, I remember looking out the window as we flew over the Kenai Peninsula on the flight south, wondering if I had made a mistake and if I would ever get the chance to come back to Alaska. The Texas assignment was a good one. I managed operations in a number of states and was able to be part of a startup company called Bastar Resources. Bastar was majority owned by ARCO, but was IPO'd and listed under some symbol on the New York Stock Exchange. In 97, I had the opportunity to come back to Alaska to manage the Kuparuk Development Organization. As before, this was pretty much a no-brainer for me. I took the job, and from that point forward, made it known to my management that I did not want to leave Alaska. In a company like ARCO, an unwillingness to move usually limits one's opportunities. However, I was fortunate to have a number of different and interesting assignments. Besides the Kuparuk job, I led the technical effort to sell ARCO Alaska, which was a condition of BP's acquisition of ARCO. I managed ConocoPhillips' procurement business, including the Kenai LNG plant. I was seconded to the Denali project, which, as you may recall, was formed to build a gas pipeline for the Lower 48 to monetize North Slope gas. And I ultimately ended up leading ConocoPhillips' external affairs and pipeline business. This last March, after nearly 41 years, I elected to retire, and I don't intend to leave Alaska. My decision to retire was the event that spurred me to apply for an open position on the Board of Regents. Without a full-time job, I now have the time to serve. My interest stems from several factors. First, in my time with ARCO and later ConocoPhillips, I watched the University of Alaska graduates evolve to the point at which they now compete favorably with the other universities ConocoPhillips recruits from. In my external affairs job, I worked with the development groups at UAF and UAA to support various programs, the disciplines from which ConocoPhillips hires. I was also an internal advocate of recruiting from UA campuses. I believe that UA graduates compete well for the jobs that companies like ConocoPhillips have for new hires. And quite frankly, it's hard to get qualified people to come to Alaska and stay here for a while. However, if you're an Alaskan, you get it, you understand the state, and you generally like it here. Hiring Alaskans was good for the company and good for the University of Alaska graduates. All this gave me a keen interest in doing what I could to provide Alaskans the opportunity to get a good education in their home state that will qualify them for Alaska jobs. I also had the chance to serve on the University of Alaska Foundation. As you all know, the foundation is charged with managing the university's endowment. I joined the foundation in 2011 and termed out in 2020. During that time, I also served as chair for several years. As a board member for the foundation, I had the opportunity to see the areas where the university is strong in meeting the needs of Alaskans in the state. Our university has strong programs in teaching, accounting, nursing, logistics, engineering, Arctic research, and indigenous studies, to name a few. Its drone research program is among the best in the country and has leaders that are passionate about their fields in the university. From all of this, I gained a desire to do what I can to help the University of Alaska become stronger, stable, and with a strategic vision for the future that recognizes the fiscal pressures on the state, but also the requirement for a university that serves the needs of the state's residents for higher education and the needs of the greater Alaska community. I believe my background and passion for the university would be useful in achieving this goal. Well, that concludes my comments about myself. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Jefferson. I'll just say I see some comments that you provided to, I believe, Governor Dunleavy. Well, first of all, I appreciate your private sector point of view of recruiting Alaskan graduates. It's nice to hear that you recognize that. And I see in your comments the state must face the reality of less revenue to fund state services and that you believe you can help lead the university through the next few years to reach the goal of minimizing its dependency on state funds while providing higher education opportunities in critical areas. Thanks so much for those comments. Senator Stevens has a question or comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Scott. Congratulations on your appointment by the governor. I think you make a great addition to the Board of Regents with your experience in the foundation as well as your career. I want to ask a question, though, about that has to do with accreditation. And as you may know, the university lost accreditation to its teacher training program 2 or 3 years ago in Anchorage. The problem that occurred, as I see it, is that no one knew about it. The president told me he was not aware that they were even in jeopardy of losing accreditation. So this is an issue I think is of enormous importance to the Board of Regents, and I'd like to give you an opportunity to speak to what your interest is in making sure that we have accreditation and that we do not lose accreditation in the future.
Senator Stevens, through the chair. You know, when I heard about that, I was absolutely shocked, and I was really dismayed that the Regents were as shocked as I was. I think, you know, I'm speaking from the outside. I don't want to be critical of any part of the university system because I don't really know how it works. But, you know, this is one of those basic things that I think needs to be managed, that need oversight. And, you know, it should be something that is probably something that should happen automatically, but obviously there was a breakdown here. And, you know, as a regent, I'm going to want to make sure that we have systems in place make sure that there is an early warning system if there is an issue with regard to accreditation. You know, when I look back, I don't see any, I can't figure out how that happened. And I certainly am surprised that everybody was surprised that it had happened.
Well, thank you, Scott. And you will be joining, really, I think, a fine group of folks in the Board of Regents, a couple of new appointees. And best of luck to you. Thanks for applying for this job.
And Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a couple of questions and an observation. Scott, you and I have had some rather straightforward conversations in your prior role, and I've always appreciated your candor and your ability to, you know, sort of tell it like it is and to push back hard on comments and thoughts and ideas that I've put forward. And I would hope that you would find no hesitation in doing so in applying that same laser-like focus to the university because it needs it. And that brings me to my first question, which is, what do you think the state's role is in supporting, I mean, I've read what you wrote in the letter, but in supporting the UA system, what is sort of, if I can, just expand a little bit on your vision of where you see this system toward the end of your term, which would be in 7 years' time.
Yes, Senator Begich, to the chair. So when you say the state's role, are you thinking about just the legislative support for the university system?
Well, you've, Mr. Chairman, through the chair, you've stressed in the past, I mean, with your role at the foundation board, you've really tried to move toward, and it's a move I commend, move towards a sustained endowment. You've worked toward trying to sort of reduce the dependency, or it appears that you're working to reduce the dependency of the university system on state funds. And I'm curious as to where that's going. What is that vision of the level of state support that you might have, that you might perceive as at the end of your term would still exist, and how you would be offsetting that? I'm really trying to get at what your operational sort of approach is, your philosophy and approach toward serving on the Board of Regents. And I think I'm pretty sure I'm going to agree with it, but I want to see what you know, in your words, what it is, rather than me putting my words on it.
Okay. Senator Baggett, through the chair. I'm going to approach this in a fashion where I'm trying to understand just where do we want the university to be. We know that we have less funds available for all state functions. I mean, that's just a fact of life. And we're not going to go back to the days when we had, you know, just wasn't unlimited, that we had really substantial funds for just about anything the state wanted to do. But as part of that, we have to figure out, you know, what are the things that the university is good at? What are the things that serve the needs of our community? You know, I mentioned some of the disciplines that the university is very strong in right now, and those serve needs here in the state, and also in some instances we can prepare individuals for careers that will go outside the state. And that's all good. That's what we need to do for our students here in the state. But as part of that, we also have to face the fact that with less money, we're going to have to shape the university in a way that can deliver those products, deliver that that vision for what we want the university to be within those constraints. So we're going to have to take a look at, you know, what our costs are. Now, what are the things that, you know, if you're in private business, or things that don't add value that you could potentially eliminate? How do you gain the efficiencies that allow you to deliver your end goal, but do it within the monies that you have available? As a regent, you know, and I'm not a regent right now. I don't have inside information that hopefully a couple of years from now I will have, so I can't kind of lay out exactly what are the specific steps, what are those areas that I think we need to focus on. But I would envision that as we move down that path, we'll visit with the legislature and we'll share that vision, and you know, we'll have a unified perspective on terms of what we want the university to be, what it's good at, what it's strong in, the areas that we want to emphasize, and what it's going to take to support it. I don't know if the current funding is adequate or not. I don't know if we can do it with less, but I want to come and share that vision and talk about what it's going to take in order to achieve it, and then hopefully have the support of the legislature, the governor, the university, and the various stakeholders of the University of Alaska system.
Follow up.
If I could do a little housekeeping real quick. First of all, I'd like to invent Senator Hughes to the committee. She's able to make it. And I'm just going to mention we will be taking public comment shortly. And if you want to call in or listen in, we have the Juneau number 586-9085 and Anchorage number 563-9085, and or comments to sedc@akledge.gov. And once again, we're hearing from Scott Jepson, appointed to the University Board of Alaska Board of Regents. Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And so that you've really outlined the beginning of what I think is the vision I expected to hear, and I like that. And you know, I think it's not. My comment would be it's not just what the state's level of support is, but you know, really commending your efforts at moving toward a stronger endowment, commending your efforts at trying to move towards some more private capital coming into the university, but. But one of my concerns, and it's come up in our committee here recently, is sort of the loss of civics education. It's been the loss of our understanding of our role as citizens. And part of that well-rounded experience that comes out of our university is support of the arts and humanities, which have, in fact, suffered. So I just had a little cautionary note as I heard you talking about where the university is strong. It's difficult to ever point to the arts and humanities as a place that any university is strong. However, it is a core component of a well-rounded university education. It makes you a better engineer. It makes you, it makes you a better scientist. It makes you better at maths. So what is your thoughts or your thoughts on our arts and humanities program? Senator Stevens mentioned the education school, which course has to combine combination of arts and humanities, as well as grounding our teachers in strong education. So what are your thoughts on support for the arts and humanities? I'm afraid they're often considered the stepchild of our university system, but I see it as a core component, and so I'm wondering if you see it the same way.
Senator Begich, through the chair, personally, I'm getting an awful lot of static in my end, but I caught most of what you said. And right now, the static is overwhelming anything on your end. But I take it you all can hear me. I think I understand the gist of your question. I fully support the arts and humanities. It's absolutely critical, you know, for an engineer to be able to speak well, to be able to write well, to be able to think well, to have logic, good logic. You don't always get from just studying math to science, engineering, those sorts of things. Also, you know, we want to ask kids to be prepared for other things besides STEM-type careers. We want them to be prepared to be lawyers and other ones prepared to be social workers. Other things that fall outside things that I asked about earlier. So I fully support the arts and humanities. I think it's a key component of our university system. And as we look at the programs that we want to have and where we need to be strong, that will certainly be part of the equation.
Thank you very much.
Yes, I believe we have static fading in and out from both sides of this conversation, but I think we're pretty much hearing what everybody has to say. Are there any other questions from the committee? Oh, I'm sorry. Also, I'd like to welcome Senator Machicki, who's able to make the meeting this morning. Thanks so much. And a question or comment from Senator Machicki.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Jepson, for being here and for allowing your name to be put forward for the Board of Regents. I guess the questions I would have, and you may have covered this, I'm sorry I'm late to this meeting. When we think about the funding issues that have sort of hit the university in the last several years, I do like the fact, and of course we go way back for full disclosure, we work together, I've known you for a long time, but I actually like the private sector experience that you have. I know you've been in the private sector involved in having to reduce costs and find very much more efficient ways of doing things over the last several years. Is that going to be a focus area of yours? We know that funding has been dramatically reduced, yet we want a high-quality product for our young people to be prepared. Do you see some opportunities on improving the outcome, yet making the university system more efficient than we've been in the past?
Senator Machicki, through the chair. Yeah, I do. I don't believe that reduced funding equates to a lower quality education or a lower quality university. And, I know the university is not private enterprise. It's more complicated than that. It has more stakeholders than that. But over the years, you know, in business, I've seen how we can become more efficient and be more successful. And that's the kind of philosophy that I'm going to be bringing to this position.
All right. Thank you so much, Mr. Jepson. Are there any other questions from the committee? Seeing none, I will now open public testimony. Is there any member of the public wishing to testify on the appointment of Scott Jepson to the Board of Regents? Once again, that number locally would be 586-9085. I see no one in the room wishing to provide public testimony, and I see no one online wishing to provide public testimony. Public testimony is now closed. Senator Stevens, would you like to make a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move that Scott Jepson, appointed to the Board of Regents, be forwarded to a joint session of the legislature for consideration.
Please note for the record that voting on this motion or signing the committee report does not reflect any intent by any of the members to vote for or against the confirmation of these individuals during the joint session. Is there any objection to forwarding Mr. Jepson's name to the joint session? Hearing none, the motion passes. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the paperwork. Senate Education Committee is back on the record. Just a reminder, we will be ending today's meeting in time for the 10:30 floor session. I don't anticipate this meeting going beyond 10:15. We are now going to bring SB 111 back in front of the committee. I apologize, we don't have the committee substitute in front of us right now, but we do have the requested changes that were submitted And we're going to do a brief conversation on the submitted changes in preparation for tomorrow's public testimony. Once the committee substitute becomes available, we're going to post it to our website. Let's see. I would like to suggest changes that have already been requested. Once we have this, yes, we'll continue the examination of the bill. Mr. King, please come seat at the table and place yourself on the record and provide a summary of the requested changes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Ed King, staff to Senator Holland. Mr. Chairman, we'll just walk through the requested changes. We don't have the exact language that's in the CS or the locations of those changes, so we'll just talk at a high level of what those changes we expect to see, hopefully by the meeting on Monday. Change number one inserts culturally responsive into four additional places in the bill. Change number two adds an annual report to the Parents as Teachers program. Change number three is an attempt to clarify the carry forward provisions by reducing the language that was in the bill and making it a little bit more streamlined. So in the request, we got rid of the 50% language and just basically asked that the department have authority to approve funding carryovers above 25% with departmental approval.
So for clarification, it goes from 10% to 25%. And then above 25% is per department approval.
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. The idea being that if in the current situation where excess funding exists, the department would be able to approve the use of those funds moving forward, those federal dollars. And if a situation like that were to develop in the future, this would give latitude to the department to deal with that issue.
And the excess funds, or we're talking about CARES dollars.
Yes,
pretty much. Chairman. Senator Begich.
Yes, very quickly, and to clarify, it also, you had indicated in the prior version there was a NAEP score standard, and in discussion this with Senator Holland, he indicated that was no longer there because it didn't apply to all districts. Is that correct?
Senator Begich, through the chair, that is correct. The discretion is fully at the department.
Senator Hughes.
And I believe in the prior version, it required the additional funding be for academic instruction as opposed to administration. Is any of that still in there, or does it leave that up to the department?
Senator Hughes, through the chair, it's department discretion.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Machicki?
Yes, so you said the ability to spend, but actually this is about the ability to carry forward. So doesn't require a spending plan. It allows them to carry above 25% with department approval, because that's kind of the key, right? I just the way you said it, I think I know what you meant, but can you clarify that for the record?
Thank you, Senator Machicki, through the chair. Yes, at current, if the districts were to have a balance in excess of 10% of their operating expenses, then that excess fund would be a reduction to state aid in the following year. And so there's an incentive to spend that money, quote-unquote spend that money. What this provision would do is allow them to save that money, but for a specific purpose.
Thank you.
Seeing no other questions, change four.
Mr. Chairman, change four is just a technical change. In the current version W, Sections 32 and 30 of the bill both relate to teacher certificates, one to preliminary certificates, one to regular certificates, and they used slightly different language. And so this was just a technical change to align those definitions. Change number four is a clarification within the early education regulations that are to be adopted by the State Board of Education, asking for two changes, one to clarify what is meant by federal standards in 165A5A, and second, to ensure that there's no confusion as to day in session requirements, as the current version refers to 1403-040, which doesn't address pre-element or early education programs. We simply remove that reference and tell the Board of Education to determine the correct requirements.
Senator Hughes?
Yes, and I know that schools did some pretty creative things in this past year, and I think one of them is some schools going to 4-day weeks. Would this allow a school district to do that, or is the day in session? I'm just wondering if we should be changing it to number of hours per year or something to give them flexibility in that way.
Senator Hughes, through the chair, the bill doesn't change any of the existing language that gives the commissioner the authority to reduce hours or change hours with all of the other grades. This just simply says that with an early education program that doesn't currently exist, it leaves the Board of Education to determine what those hours per day or per year might be. So there's no change to the existing law, and it's a wide discretion for the board to determine the correct day and session requirements for early education.
Okay, thank you.
Seeing no other questions, change six.
Mr. Chairman, change number six adjusts the language regarding ADM inclusion. And this was mostly just two technical changes, or somewhat technical changes. Because we have a funding limit of $3 million, there was the potential for districts that were large, that had a program that would require larger than $3 million alone to be excluded. So the change that we requested allows for partial approvals so that those departments would not be excluded. It also clarifies that when you're in the current version W, it does reference the ranking list when there's a funding limit, but it doesn't clarify whether you should work from the top or the bottom of the list, so we asked for that clarification.
Seeing no questions, change number seven.
Mr. Chairman, change number seven is an adjustment to the grants program. It's an attempt to clarify and streamline the language that was in the original version of the bill. So there was a recognition that well, 26 districts already have some form of early education programs, and so we were trying to target those 20 or so districts that we expected to participate. We requested the removal of all of that language and just simply said that there's $3 million available for funding and districts are able to apply. However, the department needs to prioritize districts that are lower on the list.
Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a question I have more to the actual list itself. When you, under the version of SB 111, you limited it 20 school districts for the grants program, which you just described was the actual ADM entrance. And so on the grants program side, was there any change made to, and I didn't bring this up during committee because I didn't catch it, but the if one of those 20 districts that are at the lower end actually do have an approved program, does that reduce the number to 19 that are available, or would it go then into that middle category to the 21st lowest district? And if not, could we clarify it so that you still retain, I have an issue with the middle area not having access to the grants program, which may be the same group that don't have pre-K programs. So what I'm suggesting is some of those districts that are lower down in the rankings may actually have, in the recent years, developed strong pre-K programs that would allow them to go into the ADM. I don't know that, but they may. I don't want to reduce the eligibility availability for grants, so would we then be able to take in the 21st or the 22nd from the bottom or 23rd from the bottom? The way it was worded, I don't think you could. Is that something you would consider? And if so, I would propose an amendment, not change your CS.
Senator Begich, to the chair, yes, I believe that what you're describing is the same thing that we identified while we were working through the requested changes, and a recognition that there was an implicit assumption that the 20 districts that would be eligible for the grants were at the bottom of the list, and that, like you said, might not be the case. And so what we did was we removed that 20 participant limit, so that now it's just a $3 million grant fund similar to the current pre-K grant funding, where the department can decide how to deploy those funds, but it should work from the bottom of the ranking towards the top. So every district will be eligible for a grant should they apply prior to ADM inclusion if money is available.
Follow up
from Senator Begich.
It sounds like then you've eliminated the grants program concept that was in the original bill. Is that, I mean, the way that grants program was designed would have provided grants that would eventually have reached all school districts. What you're describing is a much more limited grants program that would be $3 million available in the grants program with the capacity for another $3 million available or open for those who might already have a pre-existing and then approved early education program.
center baggage to the chair, just for clarification, there is now in the request, there is a $3 million per year grant program and there is a $3 million per year ADM inclusion program. Both exist. And so the programs that are already eligible with a high quality program for ADM inclusion up to that $3 million per limit, year per limit, can be included immediately. And in the event that they do go through the grant process, once they complete the grant process, they can roll into the ADM. So there are two programs. The grant program does still exist, and it is, in effect, universally available.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And what we did for simplicity, we had just removed those three tiers, and it's just a ranking system, and then the funds will be allocated until they are expired, until they used up every year.
I understand what you're doing. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
No other questions from the committee? I believe we're on change number 8.
Mr. Chairman.
Oh, I'm sorry. We have finished change number 7.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, the second change in change number 7 was a recommendation by one of the members of invited testimony to have more coordination with Head Start programs. And so when a district that does not have a locally supported or state-supported early education program wants to initiate a program, this will require that they coordinate with the Head Start program.
And that is to protect federal funds that may already be being allocated to the district. Senator Begich?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That is actually consistent with what the intent was, I think, in the other two bills, which was to do local coordination. I haven't seen the language yet, but it sounds like it's going to be a stronger coordinating component, and I don't think anybody would oppose that kind of thing. So.
No other questions? Mr. King?
Mr. Chairman, change number 8 is related to the entry of 4-year-old. This is a little bit difficult to explain and might be easier to explain when we have the actual language in front of us. The idea here is just that the addition of 4-year-olds to the public education system, because 4- and 5-year-olds are both under school age, there was a little bit of confusion on whether or how they enter early education versus their eligibility for kindergarten. And so the attempt here was to clean up that language and make sure that it was very clear that for 4- and 5-year-olds, they should be in an early education program unless they are mature enough to enter a kindergarten program.
And just for the listening crowd, we have requested our changes to Ledge Legal, and not knowing what the final language will look like once we have the committee substitute, we will be going into we'll spend a few meetings picking the committee substitute apart and going into detail on some of these fine points.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Begich.
Thank you. I hope we'll not have to go through a few meetings. We'll just have to go through one meeting to go through the changes. That's my hope.
Mr. King.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Change number 9 is just a consistency issue throughout the bill. There are references to evidence-based reading instruction or components of evidence-based reading instruction, or at times it actually lists the components of evidence reading instruction. So what we asked for is just consistency throughout the bill using the definition that currently exists in the bill.
No questions?
Actually,
oh,
I have.
Senator Hughes?
And I'm sorry, I'm still back on the Head Start thing, although I'm listening, because, you know, we've talked a lot about equity and opportunities, and I know that's a federal program, lots of wonderful people that are doing Head Start, a lot of families benefiting, but if a community can only support one preschool, pre-K program, and Head Start is doing that, I would hope that Head Start could be having as high of a quality program as what this bill would have as far as a pre-K program in another community. Otherwise, those families aren't getting the full benefit, and those children will enter kindergarten not as equipped as the children in another community that are meeting the standards that are in this bill. So I don't know if there's any way we can address that. I know it's a federal program, so we can't tell them how to run their program. But I would be very concerned as a parent. I wouldn't want my child to be in the best pre-K program possible. So I don't know if we can have conversations with Head Start about them looking at maybe perhaps, and we did hear from them that their local boards can choose how to run their programs, and I would just hope that some of them would choose to follow the high standards that this is going to put forward so those kids aren't gypped. Thank you.
Senator Bagich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I would concur with Senator Hughes that one of the things that you're likely to see happen is that the quality of all programming will go up because the competition from parents like you and others, parents would insist on, or grandparents would insist on their kids having the highest quality pre-K. So if this bill passes, goes through the process similar to the way it looks now, I would expect that if you're a Head Start program, you're going to up your game, or you're going to face, you know, constituent upset. So I suspect this will be the tide that rises all boats. So,
and I'll just mention Head Start has a broader
age range
that they'll be working with, and there may be, even if a Head Start program is local, it may not exclude if they can see that the community can support both programs. It's going to be a negotiation, I believe, that's going to involve the department. Senator Machicki, did you have a comment?
I do not.
No other comments? Mr. King, I believe you addressed change number 9. Maybe you want to change 10?
Mr. Chairman, change number 10 is, again, a consistency change and a more substantive change as well. The consistency change is, throughout the bill, there are words related to retention or retained, and there are also words related to promotion or progression. And so what we asked was for there to be a consistent use of the word progression or promotion. I believe the word we asked for was promotion to be used throughout the bill. The more technical or the more substantive change happens in 1430, 765, D, E, and F. And this was just an attempt to make it very clear what the parent's role in progression would be. And so in subsection D, it's specific to children in grades kindergarten through second, and it specifically says that it requires that a conference between the teacher and the parent happens if a reading deficiency is identified, but it's up to the parents to decide whether they want to progress the child. In third grade, the language is a little bit more restrictive, and it requires in that case that if a parent still wants to progress their child, they have to take an additional action, which would be the signing of a waiver and the inclusion of additional intensive services in their reading improvement plan. Mr. Chairman, also in subsection E, it does make a fairly significant change requiring the current language in the bill requires that the assessment be the litmus test for a deficiency. And so the change that that was recommended to us and that we requested was that we provide more flexibility to the districts to determine what that retention policy should be. And Mr. Chairman, sections 35 and 34 of version W seemed to be creating some unintended confusion and were eliminated from the bill.
Senator Machicki.
So thank you, Mr. King. There's a substantial amount of policy in sections 34 and 35. Did you bring some of that into the other sections, or do we now have a gap? It's kind of the process of promotion.
Mr. Chairman?
I'll just add that I believe that the only reasons 34 and 35 are in there is because we changed two words. So all of the verbiage already exists in legislation, so it's still in effect. It just doesn't have to be in the bill since we do not change those words. Senator Begich?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and just to address Senator Machicki's comments, those sections are in total, with the exception of that one word, are actually incorporated in the bill in earlier sections. So none of that policy is lost. That is the crux of the reading policy. That gets to the idea of how we do what triggers the reading plan, what all of that's going to be contained in the bill. That's the confusion that Mr. King is describing, is that it created confusion because it creates what appears to be a second component. So what this does is just allow the earlier sections to stay in law and doesn't change a word in them.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Hughes.
Yes, and just so people that may not have the paperwork in front of them, the two sections that laid it out allowed the word should, the child, and then the other two that are removed were must, and we realized because we had the parental waiver and with the added intervention that the must wasn't even accurate anymore because you had the parental waiver. But the idea is still that that the districts would have to inform the parent that the child, according to their evaluation assessment, it isn't ready, and then the teacher has to the parent has to decide then whether to go ahead and promote that with an agreement to ensure the child has additional intervention services prior to that next August or September when they begin the new grade level. So we realized that the must wasn't really a must anyway because we added the parental waiver, if that makes sense.
Senator Mushicki.
I'm fine with that. I actually have a question in the next section when we get to it.
Mr. King.
Mr. Chairman, change number 11, it was a recommendation from Senator Begich to account for the fact that that parents might potentially not be capable of reading written notification. And so we used a more expansive definition of notification when parents are to be notified that their child has a reading deficiency.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Mushicki.
Have we thought about so not adding to the fiscal note in any means, but we never give up on folks, but we know we have adults with literacy problems. Have we thought about a section that would direct parents with literacy issues to existing other resources that might? Why am I saying this? It's difficult to help your child when you're having difficulties reading yourself. So have we thought about perhaps making that a little bit more comprehensive on directing those parents to literacy assistance that might comprehensively help the entire family progress somewhat quicker?
Senator Begich.
If I may, I think what Senator Mushicki is suggesting is a fabulous idea, and I'd be happy to sit down and work out an actual legislation that would focus on adult literacy, because I think that would be almost a different. It clearly acknowledges the problem exists, but I think we should have something comprehensive about adult literacy. But I think that might be a standalone bill, and I think it would have a better chance of rapid movement if it were a standalone bill. But that's my sense of it. I think that's a very good point, though.
Senator Hughes.
So, and I actually had the very same thought when I saw that section. I thought, oh, that's a good addition here, but now how can we help the parents? And it could be so simple for now, without adding to the fiscal note, that the districts would just, if they're aware of it, that they just provide resources, direct the parents to where they might get help. And I know there are a lot of good teachers, a lot of good principals out there that if they were aware of that, they would probably invite the parent to be in the classroom, to be part of the process. But anyway, I do think pointing them to resources that are available wouldn't add to the fiscal note. And I'm not sure what all those resources are, but I think we should find that out.
With no other discussion, I'll also add I think it's a great idea. I know people who have been involved in other programs, volunteer instructors teaching adults to read VITA. There are programs out there, but I also know that I know of one person who worked with an adult for 10 years, one adult for 10 years. It can be a long process because once you get beyond the elastic learning stage of children, it can take a while to teach an adult to read. It's a real challenge. Mr. King, would you please proceed? I believe we've completed 11. Move on to 12.
Mr. Chairman, and I believe that in the discussion of change 12, we might address a part of the question that was just asked. Change number 12 adds additional language at the request of Senator Mushicki to ensure that parents are more actively involved in their children's reading improvement plan. And Mr. Chairman, this I don't know what the final language will be, but the idea here is that within the Section 33 of the bill, where it talks about reading intervention services, that there be more of a relationship between the parents and the teachers in the education of the child. And there's a section in the bill, actually, if I can find it fairly quickly, within Section 33.
Page.
Let me see if I can find it real quick.
Around page 33.
So So, Mr. Chairman, on page 29 of section 33, in subsection K of this additional language, this is talking about a student that did not progress, a third grader that did not progress to grade four, or a child that did progress to grade four. There's a call for additional services, and paragraph number four here is a plan for a reading at home outlined in the agreement with the parents or guardian. And so this was already pulling in the parents into that conversation and progression plan if the child is retained or progressed by the parents with a reading deficiency. The idea here was that we would take language similar to this and include it in all of the reading deficiencies identified, rather than only if they are retained or promoted with the deficiency. So this idea of pointing to parents to resources and allowing them to have coaching opportunities with the district, that in final form, it'll be up to the districts to decide what that looks like, but we are calling for more of a participation.
Senator Begich.
Thank you. This is, Mr. Chairman, this is exactly where you might put if that's being expanded to the whole section, where you could put a comma phrase that, or guiding parents to resources should they need reading and other resources, a guiding point. That is actually where you could put that if you are expanding that to the whole bill. And so it would simply direct the school districts to, if they identify an issue of a parent deficiency, they can guide the parent, not provide, but guide the parent to those resources, which is how you keep the fiscal note down, but also put the instruction in. So I think that might be, Senator Machicki, might be exactly where you're suggesting could fit. I didn't realize you were expanding that to the whole section. So that would actually make sense,
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Machicki.
Now there's additional area about creating partnerships on page 33B6, creating partnerships between the school. So that directs the school, a school selected to participate in the reading program established under this section shall, and then 6 creates partnerships between the school, the families of students. There's a couple places that we can note that, but I think there are locations in the bill that, my personal experience is we had someone working for us that was in his early 50s that was a brilliant man that had literacy problems, and we collectively worked as a team to improve that literacy and set his world on fire with his kids and grandkids. It was just kind of cool to watch. So, okay. I won't belabor that point.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. Mr. King, with no other questions or comments, I believe we're on change number 12.
Change number 13, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, change number 13.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, change number 13 is meant to address the situation where a parent doesn't participate in the conference between the parents and the teachers when a reading deficiency was identified. And throughout the bill, there were opportunities in that event that the teacher or the school board or other members of that student's education team would be responsible for the decision on whether that child is ready for promotion. Based on the recommendation that we heard in testimony, we shifted that responsibility to the superintendent or the designee of the superintendent.
Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And again, this is when the parent does not participate, so it retains the power, and the parent has to actually actively choose to not participate. But are we still sticking with the wider definition of parents, so it might include step-parent or those extended family who may be responsible for that child?
Ms. Senator Begich, yes. There was no change to the definition of parent or guardian.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Begich. Mr. King, please resume.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And on that point, I would also point out that in this situation where a parent simply misses the meeting, we did include language that allows that meeting to be rescheduled. If the decision for retention was made without the parent's involvement and the parent does want that child to be promoted, we did provide what is in effect an appeal and a reinstitution of that process.
Thank you. Number 14.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Change number 14, I believe was a request by Senator Hughes to make it more explicit that the school district should try to encourage children to catch up to their peer group. And we did add some language that says basically only if that's requested, because there would be situations where a parent, after making the decision that the child should be retained, might be comfortable with that retention or that lack of promotion. And so we did try to establish more of a quote-unquote roadmap for catching up to your peers, but only if that's the desire of the parent.
Senator Begich? Mm-mm. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Senator Hughes?
Yeah, I'm wondering, do we have anywhere in the bill where if a child is doing really well in math or something that they would stay with their cohort, or is that going to be a district-by-district decision?
Senator Hughes, through the chair, that isn't explicitly addressed in the bill, and so it would be a district decision on how to manage the delayed promotion, whether that can be a universal delay or whether it can be a subject-specific delay. I don't. That is not addressed in the bill.
Thank you.
Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to Senator Hughes's point, a number of districts do have sort of bifurcated policies or processes. I'd probably have to dig around and find a list, but those local decisions are often made with consideration of the student in the policies themselves. They always have deferential to the student's ability to achieve in whichever class, so that does exist in a number of districts now.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Senator Begich. Mr. King?
And Mr. Chairman, the last change is a simplification and throughout the bill, making sure that all of the new programs that are being implemented by this bill are treated equally in terms of the efficacy test that's later made in year 2031 prior to the sunset in 2032. And so the idea here is that all of the changes that are costing money or that are putting a burden on the school districts, if they're not working, there is a automatic off-ramp that the legislature can take without taking any other action. But we are requiring that the department bring something to the legislature. My impression would be that a bill introduced by the governor would accompany that report that suggests what those changes should be.
Senator Machicki.
So two things. First of all, I request an updated chart on the effective date matrix. Second thing is I strongly encourage our committee to consider only sunsetting the funding and not the policy. I hope to not see a sunset occur. I hope it's remarkably effective. But we put an enormous amount of work. I mean, the Senator Begich and Hughes, Deed, the governor's office, Senator Hall, and folks on this committee, this is good policy. So I would hope that we'd consider sunsetting the funding but not the policy. Even if it were to sunset someday, there are districts that are going to use these standards to improve what they deliver going forward, even if the funding were to sunset.
Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you had anticipated, this would be the one area that I'd be less inclined to, but I want to commend you for addressing one of the issues I brought up over and over again, perhaps ad nauseum during the prior sectional analysis and review, which is consistency. I haven't seen the language yet, and I'm looking forward to seeing the language, but I absolutely think throughout the description of these changes, what I've seen is an effort to make it a consistent bill, which strengthens the bill. It doesn't weaken the bill. You've identified in this process a number of weaknesses from the prior language, whether from SB 8 or 42 or even 111's new language, and you've tried to address those. And so in general, I feel very confident with the direction that this is going. I, of course, will be in opposition to the sunset dates. But I want to just reiterate the report requirement piece here. And something Senator Hughes said in one of the prior hearings, and if I misrepresented, please correct me, Senator Hughes, but she had asked, and I have asked as well, for robust reporting. Not simple reporting, but robust reporting. So we know what's working, when it's working, and how it's working. I'm not sure if that's incorporated in the CS, and if it's not, maybe there's a way we can look at that. I don't want to delay this bill any longer. But what I would like to get, and if the commissioner or the department is online thinking about this, would be from them language that would describe what robust review would include. So we had language in one of the earlier versions of one of the bills that talked about a evaluation component and actually paid for an evaluation component that would evaluate on a regular basis. Are these things working? If not, what could be done to adjust them or change them? And to have those not just be on the last year prior to the sunset date, but have those periodically. So that kind of robust accountability ensures that we're investing the resources in an appropriate and proper manner. That could, if we had enough robust language, it might actually satisfy the sunset date issue in the sense that if you have robust consequential evaluation, which would be sort of my suggestion to the committee, you wouldn't need to sunset it because you would have that issue. That said, just because there are sunset dates will not cause me to oppose this bill, given that they are consistently applied or appear to be based on this description of changes. So I want to be clear about that. But if we have a robust accountability process that the Commissioner of Education perhaps could provide to us, and I haven't discussed that with him, so I should have perhaps, because if he's listening, he's probably freaking out right now. But that might be actually meet our responsibility as members of this committee and this legislature to ensure that we are being accountable to the people's dollar at the same time that we're doing what we can to improve the legacy of education in this state. So that's kind of where I'm coming from with that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Begich. With no other questions or comments, Senator Michicki.
I didn't hear any comments on my suggestion that the policy survive. Was there any members that had any comments on that suggestion? I just hate to see the entire effort go away, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I forgot to comment on it. That's the only reason I got wrapped up in my words there, Peter. So, Senator Michicki, I think your approach is the right approach if you are going to have a sunset clause. You sunset the funds, not the policy. That came up over and over again during our discussion, whether it was the advancement of a strong early education policy in the bill, which we have, whether it's a strong policy around reading. Just understand that, and I know you do, that if you sunset but keep a policy in place, what you're going to hear back from school districts and from others is it then becomes an unfunded mandate of sorts. So just keep that in mind. But I would add, none of these policies are necessarily so prescriptive that they would force a district to do them. That's one of the advantages of the resource being connected to it.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Michicki.
The Kenai Peninsula Borough School District, I mean, we're relatively small. Well, we're not a relatively small district. There's 55,000 people living on the Kenai. But our performance, because of our reading intervention program, is well above every other larger community and only topped by Galena and Southeast communities. The standards for those programs, I think, are important that might actually help if something does go wrong and funding does sunset, may help drag others into that voluntary reading intervention programs and perhaps early education as well. So that was my primary reason for it's working in our district. I was actually surprised when I saw those numbers on the peak testing. Not that I don't think we have a great district, but that we were that high in comparison to the larger municipalities, every other larger municipality. So I wanted to bring that point forward.
Mr. King, are there any more comments regarding the changes to SB 111?
Mr. Chairman, I would just point out that there are reporting requirements for each of these programs, the Parents and Teachers Program, the Reading Intervention Services, the Reading Specialist, the Virtual Consortium. Each of these programs do have annual reporting requirements, the idea being that those annual reports would roll up into a final report to the legislature on how the program should progress and whether they should be repealed or not. The sunsetting of the policy is simply to make that the default rather than trying to create policy that takes away a program once it's created, which is always challenging. The default would be that the program goes away unless it's continued. And the, Mr. Chairman, the attorney that I spoke to did say that the repeal of those sunsets, if these programs are working, is a fairly straightforward process. You simply go into through uncodified law, you simply go back into this bill and remove those sections before they take effect.
Senator Begich.
Thank you. Just on the reporting issue, you know, what I'm talking about here, we all get our annual reports from the department. Some of us read them, some of us don't. That's just the nature of all the annual reports we get from everybody. What I'm talking about is a significantly more robust evaluation component that literally says and makes recommendations annually or biennially to the to the education committees of the legislature that based on our evaluated neutral research, we believe these things should be changed, you know, that kind of robustness. I'm actually talking about a higher level. You know, what I was impressed with Dr. Burke was the relatively consistent review of what they're doing, and they're constantly retooling and improving. That struck me as something that would be worth considering if there's a process to that. Again, I would defer to the Department of Education to see if that was even feasible. But if it's not feasible, you know, drop the suggestion. But my idea there is not the simple annual reports we get. 22 people went here, 35 went to there, whatever it might be. But the actual robust discussion that you and I have had and others have had about, are we really making a difference here? Not just from test scores, but from a strong evaluation from whether it's the Northwest Lab or whatever group that does it, but a strong evaluation that says, are we turning the curve? Is that next generation of kids going to be college-bound or employment-bound and ready? You know, and those are the things we're all trying to fight for here, and that's what I think good policy would request us to do. I'm not being contentious, just suggesting that there is potentially a way to do that simply in language that we could then incorporate in the bill, though it might add a couple hundred thousand to the fiscal note, just to be clear, but nonetheless, really well invested money to tell us, are we doing the right thing or not?
With no other questions or comments from the committee.
Mr. Chairman, I have a quick
question. Senator Machicki?
Just been talking about this bill to a lot of educators around the state recently, and I will tell you that we always have the assumption that the educators expect us to send them money, but perhaps that we should stay out of expectations on progress and a better outcome. And I will tell you that the message I'm getting is they actually would like some expectations that might help them on their on the product. I think, and I was actually surprised to hear that, but I think this bill sort of helps with that. I think, and it's not a part of this bill, it's just a general statement. I think this is a sort of a blueprint for some things that we can do as an education committee for further expectations around the state that might actually help local districts deliver a better outcome for our kids. So I'll leave it at that, but I was very surprised to hear that from educators. I always thought they kind of wanted to send us the check, keep your hands off of what we do, and that's not the message I'm getting.
I'll agree to that. I tell you, I know we can't fix education in this committee. It's going to have to be fixed in the districts. It's going to have to be fixed in the schools. We're going to have the teachers. We're going to have the parents. We're going to have the students involved. But I do believe this bill will provide the tools that can make some progress. Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to comment that this has been it is a very complex but a very important subject. I really appreciate the effort of so many people. You know, we've gone through several years of trying to figure this out. We've gone through a very large task force that was established a couple of years ago, and I think this is exactly the way that good legislation is written, and thank you for your taking charge of this and seeing it through to this point. Thank you.
With no other comments from the committee, thank you, Mr. King, for your presentation today. As I mentioned earlier, we have our requests in for the committee substitute. We're not quite sure what that language is going to look like when it comes out, but we will be disseminating that as soon as we have it in our hands. We will be having public testimony tomorrow morning at 10 a.m., and you can rewind the tape if you want to hear. Juneau's phone number is 586-9085. Anchorage's phone number is 563-9085. Outside of those two areas is going to be 844-586-9085. We will now set SB 111 aside and continue public testimony tomorrow at 10 a.m. Is there any other business before the committee? Hearing none, our next meeting is tomorrow, Sunday, April 10th at 10 a.m., and we are now adjourned at 10:10.